I'm Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview. On today's show, I'll talk to Tamara Lush, an Associated Press reporter who's branched out into fiction writing with her first romance novel, Hot Shade. Stick around. This book is smoking hot. No kidding. You'll want to read a little, take a cold shower, and read a little more. Get the picture? To paraphrase the 39th President of the United States, I have lust in my heart for Tamara Lush. Now, we've never met in person, never even laid eyes on each other before this video interview commenced, but having read her searingly inflamed first attempt at romance fiction, I can't help but want to get to know her better. Fortunately, she's in a soundproof booth and can't hear me right now, I think. Tamara, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Ah, shit. Well, look, what can I say? Hot Shade is a passionate, erotic story about Skylar, a young female reporter in a small Florida beach town who meets a mysterious Italian tourist in the course of doing her job. He soon turns her on in ways she never knew existed. It's an excellent first effort, and I know I want to read more from the ironically named Lush. Now, just a little background. Tamara Lush is currently a St. Petersburg, Florida-based reporter for the Associated Press. Yes, the AP. I know. Crazy, right? Before that, she spent many years writing for the Tampa Bay Times, and she's damn good at that, too. Now, I've spent my entire career around female journalists, and if they all have imaginations as vivid as Tamara's, I envy the loves of their lives. Tamara Lush, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. That was quite the introduction.
Yeah, and while my cheeks stop flushing from embarrassment, maybe you could tell folks a little about your background leading up to writing your first novel. For example, I mean, did you always want to be a writer? And, you know, how did you know that this was the life for you?
Well, I did always want to be a writer, actually. When I was in, I think when I was in second grade, I was heavily influenced by Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I think in the early 80s, I wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark fanfic, I think. And they always had to do with sort of vaguely handsome foreign men doing swashbuckling things around the globe. And there was a heroine who needed to be rescued or something. I was really heavily influenced by Marion Jones from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yeah. I loved her.
Yeah, she was awesome. So I always wanted to be a writer, and I realized I wouldn't really want to be an archaeologist because I didn't want to be uncomfortable, but I did want to be a reporter. And that is, you know, I majored in broadcast journalism in college in Boston at Emerson College. And in my first journalism job at a small newspaper, a very small newspaper in Massachusetts, I started reading romance novels. I loved romance novels. I always liked spicy books, even in high school. I always liked the sex in books. I won't make any bones about it. I always did. I liked well-written romance novels. And so I read those and I thought, you know, someday I'm going to write one. And in my early 20s, I didn't have the experience. I didn't have the focus. And plus, I was really focused on my journalism career at that time. And then I think it was probably around 2012 where I came back at it and really thought, you know, now is the time. I'm in a good place and I'm really settled in my career and I can really take time to write a novel.
And you have a dog, obviously.
I do have a dog. Two dogs, as a matter of fact.
What kind of dogs do you have?
I have a Shih Tzu and a Tibetan Spaniel, and I'll bet that they see something going outside here in St. Petersburg. So she just wants me to know, but I'm just going to ignore her now.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I figured since they made themselves part of the show, we needed to know what
right. I apologize. I feel terrible.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Okay. I want to go back because I knew you had gone to Emerson College, and I've had a couple of people on the show who are Emerson grads. I've had at least one Emerson professor on. What is it about Emerson, do you think, if that had an influence on you? But what is it about Emerson that turns out so many creative and very successful people, frankly?
Oh, well, Emerson, I think Emerson really does a good job. It's a really specific communication school, and it really does a great job at teaching you how to get a job as a communications professional. I mean, really, it's 4 years of learning how to get a job in your field. Almost everybody in my class got a job in their field. My first job actually was in radio. before, and then I was laid off shortly after that. But then I got a job as a print newspaper reporter. So yeah, it really prepared me well. It prepared me how to sell myself, and it prepared me how to get a job.
Yeah, there was, I should have had a list handy, but there was an impressive list of people who went to that school and are working in
yes.
media, both on the, you know, on the creative side of fiction or writing TV shows or journalism. All kinds of stuff. A lot of comedians, I think.
Lots of comedians. Jay Leno, yep. Stephen Wright. Lots of journalists. There's a lot of journalists at the AP. A lot of our a bunch of our top broadcast people went to, you know, behind the scenes broadcast people went to Emerson as well.
Because we can't all go to Indiana State now, can we?
No, we can't.
IU, I guess, is where. Oh, those people. Were there any particular teachers, either maybe in high school or at Emerson, who influenced you, or particular writers?
Teachers. I went to a small high school in Vermont. It was an odd sort of private public school in northern Vermont. It was in what is called the Northeast Kingdom. It's this little tiny liberal, weird enclave of a place where there's about 2,000 people, and my English teacher in high school, he also was a banjo player in Bread and Puppet, who I don't know if you've heard of Bread and Puppet. It's like this giant theatrical political thing in the wilds of Vermont. And he would play banjo, and he let us read Hunter S. Thompson. He let us read whatever we want, and we could write about whatever we want. They really fostered a lot of creativity. And in fact, of his classes, author T. Greenwood, I don't know if you've heard of her. She's a women's fiction writer. She was in his classes. A friend, almost all of us have become creative professionals in some way. So it's pretty amazing out of a very, very small rural school.
What was the town?
Lyndonville, Vermont, near St. Johnsbury. You've probably never heard of it.
It's funny. I was going to guess that it was near St. Johnsbury. I've been there a couple times. And
yeah.
It's a very cool town. It had a great little independent bookstore.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a great area. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an area where there's a lot of it's odd, and it's very rural. And when I was, you know, going to school there, it had half of the school was sort of dorm students, boarding students, and you know, there were just a lot of people who were the children of very creative people. And some of my dearest friends are still people that I met there. We really count each other as sort of. It's an odd thing, but it was a very special place.
Oh, winters in Vermont, you have a lot of time to be alone with your thoughts. And
there's a lot of time. We read and we listened to music, and it was the 80s, so we didn't have the internet. So it was this really magical place and time. So I think that that's where, oddly enough, I never took a writing class in college. I mean, I took broadcast writing classes, but I never took a print writing class, and I've never taken, you know, a fiction writing class until actually last year. I did take a fiction writing class, a romance writing class, with Media Bistro, actually, with a woman named Susan Squire. She's a paranormal writer. That was the first actual writing class I've ever had.
But what kind of writer is she?
She's a paranormal romance writer.
Oh, yeah, I know she's paranormal, but you know, so that's what's wrong with her. But I mean, what kind of writer? Never mind. I'm sorry. I'll let it go there. All right. So, now I do want to. I have to say, we keep referring to the book as romance, but in my mind, this is sexual fiction to me more than it is just straight romance. I mean,
really? See,
in a way, you know, like,
say that because. So when I've gotten good reviews from like RT, which is Romantic Times magazine, some really good romance industry publications and blogs. Interestingly, the reviews that I've gotten that have been sort of mediocre, they say that it's not steamy enough.
Are you kidding?
No. I think only journalists and people who don't read romance would be shocked by this, because honestly, in terms of romance, it is very, very tame.
Well, in terms of romance, I think the sex is, I mean, I said it, I think that the sex in the book is very hot, and it keeps recurring regularly. I years ago, I just reposted this interview after 30 years. I interviewed Russ Meyer, the adult filmmaker,
uh-huh.
and he made a point of saying that he had 7 endings in every one of his films.
Oh.
Because there were people who just wouldn't make it through that much more of the film. You know,
right.
You know, there'd be
right.
this big climactic scene, and then people would leave. And so he made it so that there was a continuous. And I mean, the book is like that. There's like a cascading effect of sexuality, and and almost, you know, there's almost, you know, I don't want to give too much away. As a matter of fact, I stopped 20 pages short of the ending, so I would not give away the ending. So I'm going to finish the book tonight after we do this interview, but I try to do that with fiction. I don't want to be, you know.
That's a good idea. I mean, especially for you, absolutely, so you don't.
But I mean, I've read these books. I've read and had a number of – I mean, Jackie Collins has been on here. Was on here two or three times. And, you know, that was a big treat for my mother, because she would read all the Jackie Collins books, and then I would, you know, steal them and read them. And same thing with, like, Harold Robbins in the 70s and stuff like that. So when I interviewed Jackie Collins, my mother was like, oh, my God, you know, I mean – Jackie Collins, very, very hot and very, you know, she wouldn't tell you that she wrote romance. She wrote sex books. They were very, you know, hot and heavy.
Sure. But I you know, I have to say that, you know, for instance, one blog, two blogs basically said your book was good. One reviewer actually said on Goodreads, you know, the sexy times and the action were good, but the rest, kind of boring.
Really?
Like the plot.
I don't see it at all. And there's, you know, there's a little spirit of humor that runs through it. I liked it a lot.
Thank you. I mean, I tried. I had no idea how it would be received at all. I had no idea. It was very odd, and it's also very odd to think that my journalism colleagues are reading it.
Okay, since you brought that up, I was going to wait a few minutes. I got to ask you about that. I mean, you know, let's, before we get to them, you're married. Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Coincidentally, to an Italian, from what I understand.
Yes.
What happens the first time your husband either reads over your shoulder or you say, will you read this? What's the response? Or
he doesn't read it.
Has he read it at this point?
No, he's read about a quarter of it.
Why?
Well, I think a couple of reasons. One is a very practical reason. One is that English is not his first language. So reading, while he can obviously read in English and write in English, it's not a pleasurable, reading in a second language isn't pleasurable, I don't think, like you, it, for you and I. I mean, for you and I, it would be like breathing to read in our own language. But when you're struggling to read in a second language, and I wouldn't even say struggling. I mean, he reads well, but reading fiction is not, that's not a relaxing, pleasurable thing for him. So, and I also think that he, I don't know. I don't know why he hasn't read it. It's not that important that he hasn't read it.
and that's all fine and good. I know if my wife found that I was writing stuff like this, which it's not beyond the pale. I mean, it's not beyond possibility now that my kid's out of the house and I'm not responsible to a bunch of middle school soccer moms anymore.
Right.
But I was curious about that. But okay, so
he does know. I mean, he knows the sexual content. He knows what sex scenes. In fact, strangely enough, the initial edit of that book, there was more sex, and they had and I guess I can say the hero and heroine had sex earlier in the book, because really. And I don't mind saying this, you know, because it's out there in reviews, and reviewers have made this point about it, that it's unusual these days in a romance where the hero and heroine do everything but have sex.
And by sex, we're talking, they don't have intercourse.
Right. Yeah, that's unusual in a romance these days.
But I see, maybe it's my age, or maybe I don't know, maybe I'm, I thought that was one of the best parts of the books is,
thank you.
Is that they do, you know, over time, they graduate from one thing to the next thing. There's phone sex. There's
sexy sex.
There's all kinds of stuff going on. The young woman, Skylar, is in control of the story for the most part. There's a little pendulum swinging.
Right.
You know, in terms of that. But she's largely in charge. I think it was a great move not to have them have intercourse right off the top, because the buildup, it's very effective.
That's what a romance is. And you mentioned something, that she's in control. That's also what a romance is. I mean, at its core, and that's why, and I want to make this point, that yes, while it is about sex, writing romance and reading romance and writing good romance is a really feminist act, because it's about women taking control of their own lives and their own pleasure.
Well, and I mean, having read a number of these books over the years, whether for this show or, like I said, stealing my mother's books, because I was ravenous. I'd read anything you put in front of me when I was growing up. It just seemed like, I lost my train of thought for a second, but it just seemed that, a lot of that fiction written by women over the years has women. You would think that they would be writing strong women who take charge. A lot of them are women who are just, they're writing these stories about men taking charge of them, doing what they will with them, which just kind of, promulgates a stereotype. This is not like that.
I think in the 80s, definitely. I think probably in the 70s and 80s, the romance fiction was a lot like that. I mean, I belong to a group in particular. We talk a lot about feminism and romance. And actually, there is an entire blog devoted to romance novels for feminists. And the blogger reviews romances and talks about feminism in romance. I don't know, is it mainstream? I'm not sure. I mean, I know that, my book is doing pretty well now, but it's not, we're not talking about in the 50 Shades of Grey category, obviously. Realistically, it probably won't, because it is a very, I don't know if it's a very different theme, but it's slightly different enough that I'm not sure it will resonate with everyone. Because women really do like to read about alpha males and men who take control. If you look at the top romance novels on Amazon, that's what a lot of them are about. And that's the reality.
So we talked about your husband who has not read the book, so that answers that. You and I are friends on Facebook. We have a lot of, through the Tampa Bay Times, where you used to work and still have your office, I think. We have a lot of common friends. And in the weeks approaching release of the book, you were getting the word out and sharing the cover, and you were kind of tipping people off and saying, there's sex in this book. It's kind of, it's called Hot Shade, but I mean, it is a hot book. And so now you're at this point where the book is in release. Your coworkers, your friends, your previous coworkers, your little known cousin in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. I don't know. Everyone has access to the book. So is it a little awkward? As you hear from people who, you run into them face to face, has that happened yet? Or are you still at the phase where people are just getting the book and you haven't encountered anybody going, hey, Tamara, hey,
Well, yeah, actually I was, I can tell this story. I was covering Charlie Crist's announcement for Congress the other day. I show up, written reporter mode, and somebody from the Tampa Bay Times says, hey, how's the porn business?
Yeah.
I'm like, and I don't think he's even read it, but maybe he has. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think that some people, I know that some people have read it, and it's raised a lot of interesting observations that, especially female journalists, that I think they're kind of reluctant to review it. I keep asking people, like all authors do, hey, please review it on Amazon. Please, 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 And a lot of people who have read it and said they liked it, I don't think have reviewed it. That may be because they're journalists and they don't want to have a public opinion, or maybe something else. I don't know, which is all good.
So, people are still in the same age. They're uncomfortable with their sexuality. It's difficult for them to, some people to put in words. And that's why I say it, but it's a very sexual book. And that may be too much for some people to handle.
It might be. I mean, I think for people who are used to reading romance, I mean, I do have colleagues at the AP and in previous colleagues who read romance, and they're all about it and they like it a lot, and it's in line with whatever they've been reading. I think if you are used to reading like women's fiction or narrative nonfiction as a female journalist, journalists in general can sometimes be a little, sometimes they're a little conservative about certain things. I know I am.
Of course.
But I don't feel like a whole lot of embarrassment. Like I don't have family to embarrass. Like my father, he's embarrassed proof. You might have seen him on Facebook talking about whatever. I don't have children. So, I don't have anybody that my husband cannot be embarrassed. It doesn't factor in. I don't have a filter when it comes to that. So you know, and I will say, though, that the AP has been really wonderful in, you know, in having no problem with me writing this. And I said to them very early on last year, in fact, I'm writing a book. It's fiction. It has, you know, there's sex in it. The sex is respectful. It's not, you know, bondage. It's not shape-shifting panthers. I mean, and all of those things are fine. And I don't think the AP would have any problem if I did want to write about shape-shifting panthers or bondage. But it's a respectful relationship. And it's not, you know, there's no non-consensual sex, for instance, which is a big, you know, sure. That is a genre of romance, definitely. Non-con romance. But the AP was very nice. And I even asked them, do you want me to write under a pen name? And they said, it's up to you. You do what you need to do.
Well, I was just going to ask you about that, because a lot of the people who write romance fiction, and there's a lot of men writing as women, frankly, we know that, they write under, you know, an assumed name, a pen name, for just this reason. I had just 2 weeks ago, Jane Peden was on here, who's a lawyer. Again, there's been a rash of St. Petersburg fiction writers lately, but she's written this romance novel about what she knows. It's a lawyer, and it was a fun book. There was sex in it. Not to the degree that there is in Hot Shade. It, you know, the sex scenes were very well written in hers, but it didn't have the same kind of heat emanating from it that your book does. But she has insulated herself a bit by using a pen name, and you know, that gives her a little. She can step back a little bit, and you know, she's. Most of the lawyers that she works with don't know that this is her. You, on the other hand, I mean, Tamara Lush is the author of the book. And ironically, and it cracks me up, you have a name that would have been a perfect pen name for someone else.
It's a perfect pen name. I know. And that's one of the, there were a few reasons why I didn't go with a pen name. And one is I do have a perfect name for a romance novelist. The other reason was very practical, is that I have a pretty big social media network on Twitter and on Facebook. And quite honestly, I did not want to have to start from scratch with another person. I don't have the time to do that, because my days are devoted with the AP and my nights are devoted to fiction. I don't have time to just build something else from scratch. It's so difficult to begin with to be seen as a romance writer, because there's so many books out there. So I didn't want that. And quite honestly, I felt it was important for me as a reporter to be completely transparent. I didn't want to be covering a story that had to do with sex. I mean, I covered one of the biggest stories that I've covered during the AP, my AP years, has been, you know, South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford. I don't know if you know this, but when he had his issues about going to Argentina, they flew me up there to talk to Mark Sanford, and he told me and my editor everything. We had some pretty, you know, we broke much of that story. So I didn't want anybody, if I had to do another story similar to that, or Tiger Woods, that's another story I worked on. I didn't want any reader to say, like, oh, look what we found. This person who's an AP reporter also, you know, writes romance under another name. She must be ashamed. I'm not ashamed. So I want to be completely transparent with everybody. I think people, you know, romance readers and news readers can understand that I do two different things, and that I'm one person, and that's the way it is.
I had to assume that you were not ashamed of your work because you've been promoting it quite a bit, and, you know, you're going to come on here and do this, right. Which is why in the introduction I took a chance, even though I didn't know you, and was, you know, it could have been, it may still be that you get off this interview and go, oh my God, that guy's really creepy. But, you know, I just thought I enjoyed the book. It's a sexy book. I keep saying that, but it's true. Let's talk a little bit about Skylar, the heroine in the story. She, as you did, started at a small paper. You advance her to a small beach town in Florida that curiously has a kind of an Italian name to it. Do you know?
Palmera, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, and it's interesting that she and her coworkers at the Palmera paper, they kind of dream about the big time at the Tampa Bay Times. And I you know, it got me thinking, we're probably going to have to see her again, because, you know, we got to see her kind of work her career through the chain, you know?
Well, yeah.
Don't talk about the ending.
Okay, I won't talk about the end. yes, there, you know, I don't have any plans right now to write a sequel, but it could, I'm never going to say never. Let's put it that way. I love Skylar as a character. And really, while you say it's a book about sex, I really think of it as a book about a coming, I mean, really, I wrote it as in the new adult genre, you know, a coming of age story about somebody who just got out of college and she's in her first job and she doesn't really have anybody else in the world. And because her mother passed away and she never knew her father. And really, you know, it's this story about this girl finding herself as, you know, a young woman finding herself in a new place, in a new job, and where she, how her life is going, you know, to unfold.
Well, but of course, her primary previous experience was this horrible experience with this older guy at the newspaper. Just horrible. God, I mean, did you have an experience, anything like that personally?
Yeah, that's probably
that's
not
the first time you've paused this whole interview. You actually paused to think about that for a second. Okay. was there a bad relationship of that type in your own?
Oh, not to that degree. No, absolutely not.
All right. Absolutely. I love the way it ended in terms of the way she ended it, but that was clever. I didn't see that coming. it's a coming of age story for her. But it, there's a lot of it that has to do with sexuality because her previous relationship ran her down and as a sexual human being so much, just beat her into the ground. She has no self-confidence,
right.
No sense of self, and part of what holds her back with this swarthy, mysterious Italian is that she's coming off of that terrible relationship with a man and she thinks she's horrible at all this. She doesn't, you know. So I don't want to say it's a sex book. It's not like a Russ Meyer movie, but it's a very sexual book. Can we say that?
Sure. It's a sexual book. Absolutely. And, she comes to a sexual awakening in addition to, you know, all of the other new experiences in her life.
And romance is certainly a part of it, but
right.
I mean, anyway, I don't want to keep, you know, going over the same ground here. So your husband hasn't read the book or is only, you know, aware, he's aware that there's sex in the book. I guess I sort of have to ask you, I mean, you know, because in journalism, we try so hard to get the details right, for the sex scenes in the book. Did you, you know, sometimes you have to kind of test drive these scenes and say, listen, honey, I know this seems silly, but we need to go through this step by step. I just need to make sure this is going to be accurate because I don't want someone coming back to me and saying, you just imagine that in your head. You didn't actually experience that.
Yeah, I mean, there are times when I do say, like, could you move over there? Could you move a certain way? I mean, not even necessarily in a sexual context, but when writing a scene, any physical scene, sometimes you just want to see how people move around. Definitely it's necessary. Sometimes he's like, oh God, do we have to talk about sex again? He does that. Like, not at breakfast, but because he's a very practical guy. He's just like doing his thing. But yeah, I mean, we talk about it a fair bit. And I will say, I've written a second book. My agent has it. It's in front of some publishers, and it's a far sexier book.
Ooh.
And it's also newspaper themed.
Oh boy. Okay. Well,
if I can talk about it a little bit, just a second.
Yeah, please. Sure.
It's about a newspaper publisher who is trying to save her dying newspaper.
Okay.
And a private equity investment fund manager comes to save her.
Very interesting. All right. Let me think. Has that ever happened in locally? Gee, I can't think of that happening. Yes. Not speaking of the times, but speaking of the times, a lot of reporters from the Tampa Bay Times, the old St. Petersburg Times, have wound up writing books, and a growing number of them writing fiction. Probably and been successful at it, probably, I think, in greater percentage than at certain other papers. I mean, we don't hear a whole lot about, and I apologize to our comrades there, but the Sarasota Herald Tribune or the Manatee Herald or the Lakeland Ledger, we don't hear a whole lot about the, you know, their staffers writing fiction or writing nonfiction. What is it in the air at the Times, do you think? Should we all come down there and breathe deep and be inspired in some way, or what is it?
Well, I think you could probably also include the Miami Herald in that, because they've had a fair number of fiction writers as well. I mean, really big ones, obviously, Dave Barry and Carl Hiaasen.
Oh, those guys, they don't count.
Right. But, the Times, especially for young writers,
Edna Buchanan.
And Edna Buchanan, of course, absolutely.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the Times just, for young writers, it has been this place where people can learn to tell a story. And once you get that in your blood, you want to tell stories, whether they're journalism or fiction, I mean, obviously a lot of Tampa Bay Times reporters are writing nonfiction and great nonfiction. Craig Pittman, Jeff Klinkenberg, Ben Montgomery, they're all writing wonderful, wonderful nonfiction books. So it wouldn't surprise me if any of them wrote fiction in the future too. And I think some of them probably do write it in their spare time.
Well, it's definitely unlike a lot of papers. And I think that's why it's still thriving in the environment that the newspapers are in now, is that they encourage long form writing still. They still manage to find a way and a place to have, deep research, longer stories than you find in most newspapers. That was going to be my answer. So just in case you said,
sure.
I don't know, Bob, I have no idea. So where do you, you mentioned, obviously, your day job is the Associated Press. You have all these men in your life there, Charlie Crist, Bubba the Love Sponge. You still manage to get some of those weird Florida stories. You have monkeys and, all that kind of stuff. But at night, when you're writing your fiction, where do you do it? How do you do it? Do you write by hand? Do you work on a laptop? Are we seeing you in your writer's room? Tell us a little about that.
Pretty much. I mean, this is where I do it. Sometimes after my husband goes to bed, I go out on the sofa with the dogs and hang out and write on my laptop. I mean, it's really pretty informal. I mean, I know that some fiction writers talk about the muse and talk about sort of being captivated by their characters. I'm very much of a plotter. I have the book plotted out before I write it. And, by the chapter, actually. I mean, I look at it very much like a news story. I have the ending in my mind and the kicker quote and quotes here. I mean, I'm pretty analytical about it. And I think that's because of news. That's been the biggest challenge for me as a fiction writer, is to infuse the emotion in with the words and the story. Because I feel like I can tell a story in a linear way pretty easily. But getting that emotion in, that's what my editor at Burroughs Publishing Group has tried to help me with. And in fact, I just got an edit letter today for a short Christmas book that will be published this Christmas, also set in Florida. It's a little sweeter, but he'd like to spice it up a little bit, so I guess we will. But it's about a bed and breakfast owner. It's not a newspaper theme. But getting some more emotion in, that's hard. And something that really resonated with me, both for journalism and for romance writing, is that for romance writing, ideally you want to get conflict on every page, some sort of internal or external conflict. And that's not easy. Everybody always scoffs at writing a romance novel, like, oh, it's so easy and it's formulaic. Well, to those people, I would say you try it, because it's not easy.
Well, they obviously haven't read a lot of them either.
Right. Right.
One of the things I think journalism training, writing, as I'm assuming you have and still probably do, is writing, sometimes having to write a story or more a day, mm-hmm. you learn to write fast and
yes.
you get to the meat of it. Has that impacted your fiction writing? Are you able to write,
absolutely.
More rapidly because of that?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't speak for anyone else, and I wouldn't diminish any other writer's process or obstacles. For me, I don't get writer's block. Writing is just, I can turn it on, I can turn it off, mostly because I've worked at places like the AP and at newspapers and been a cop reporter where I have to write two and three stories. I mean, today I wrote three short stories, none of them bylined, same with yesterday, same with the day before. You know, you might not see my byline every week at the AP, but I do write things and I do rewrite things as well. Or I'll help out if there's a shooting in South Carolina. I'll be here in St. Petersburg rewriting and taking in the feeds from, you know, 10 people in the field. So it just varies. But yeah, it's nothing to write 1,000 words a day and then to come home and write 1,000 words of fiction. They might not be great words of fiction, but, you know, romance, I think, especially in genre fiction, you have to move the story forward every day and then really heavily edit it after you get a draft.
Right. That's the writing and rewriting. And you, I think because of the journalism training, you're not as affected by someone saying, okay, you need to rewrite this. You come to expect that every
day. Sure. Absolutely. No. I mean, rewrites, I mean, that's expected. And the reason why I went with Burroughs Publishing Group, which, and they are a wonderful small publisher, they, you know, their tagline is where story matters. And they take romance novels that are really, some of them kind of are a little outside, you know, traditional tropes and traditional genres, fantasy and paranormal and urban fantasy. And they're a really fascinating small company. And I chose them. I had 4 offers on that book. And I also had many rejections as well by big publishers. So I ended up going with them because the editor, Chris Kiesler, is very well known in the romance industry. He used to be the editor-in-chief at Dorchester. And he was, you know, two writers that I really love. He was their editor at Dorchester. And so I wanted to be with them because I knew he would help make my story better. And I think some fiction writers are wary of being heavily edited. At least first time I get the impression, I'm scared of the editing. I wanted the good editing because it will help make me a better fiction writer and a better journalism writer.
Now you've got Hot Shade is out.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned you've got short fiction coming out around Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and a second novel that's being shown to editors
right.
now. Are there books in a drawer somewhere? Is there some unpublished stuff, or was Hot Shade really the first thing and it went right to print?
I started writing Hot Shade in July of last year.
So there's no previous fiction in a drawer somewhere.
Everything has happened since July of last year. I just basically write. It's been frustrating in a way because I've had to market. You know, I've had to do marketing for this since it came out September 30th, and that's such a huge part of.
That's the hardest part.
It's the hardest part, and it's really taken away, you know, because I've got, like, tonight in an hour and a half, I've got a Facebook party where I'm going. And that's the huge thing in romance. You know, a lot of people who aren't romance readers don't know this. Facebook parties are huge. So in an hour and a half, I'm going to be on there posting photos of shirtless men who are the inspiration for Luca, the hero, and who is the inspiration for, you know, and for Skylar and an excerpt. And I'm going to give away a book and, you know, it's on and on. And so that I can't just bounce back and start writing after that. That's hard. So I'm kind of looking forward to getting back into the writing groove.
Do I need to tune into that and see if my picture shows up?
You could. You definitely could. Absolutely.
Yeah, I could tune in. I won't see my picture.
Good.
All right. Well, I mean, we've talked about the book. We've talked about journalism. We've already talked about what's next. I guess at this point, I should just say that folks, you can find Tamara Lush's first novel, Hot Shade, in great stores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you are watching this interview on MrMedia.com, you probably know this, but to the left or right underneath the video, you'll see the cover of the book. You can click on it right now. It'll take you to Amazon, where they can send it to you in 30 minutes or less via drone. And if you don't believe that, okay, you could wait a day or two, or you could get it electronically instantly. So you choose one of those. Tamara, you've got a website, I believe?
I have a website, TamaraLush.com, TamaraLush.com. Also on my Facebook, Tamara Lush Writes. Twitter, I'm active on Twitter, TamaraLush. It's all pretty universal. And if you find me on Facebook, chances are at least once a week I'm doing a party giving away the book. I have Goodreads, giveaways. I have lots of giveaways everywhere going on. So there's always a chance to win the book.
Great. I'll tell you folks one other place you can find her. If you do a Google search, or I'm sure a Bing search, but I don't use Bing. You do a Google search and type in by Tamara Lush. It'll bring up – the first thing it'll bring up is her AP story file, and you can see all the various things that she's covered or covering currently. for the AP. So, you know, if you're a journalism junkie, you will enjoy that. Tamara, a pleasure to finally meet you after so much time. Thank you for having a sense of humor. I don't know why the soundproof booth was not turned off. I will get with my technical people about that. Someone will be fired. But really, thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Meadie.
Thank you. I've had a great time. Thank you.
Is recorded live before a studio audience full of sex-starved, consenting young adults who are getting crazy from the heat in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.